All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, July 10th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
July 10th, James Davis.
Oh, I like when you add the date to it. It's like you're relevant today. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Here to get you started, keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. You can sign up to our subscription package. It's free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month after that. Includes MLB optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Football when it comes around, NBA, NHL. It's all covered in the one subscription. We have a PGA going out as well, too, through our members-only chat. So it's all covered in the one subscription package. We don't section it off by provider or sport or who wrote the articles or whatever the hell else other people do. It's just we have it up on the site. It's going to be there for you, too. So go sign up now at dfsr.com/MLB. And to get you started, James, you were just telling me about the Thai soccer team that was kidnapped and trapped in a cave. Uh-huh. I was wondering how it is. Do you think it's a tell about your brain that you just heard? I don't know if anyone's been following the story. I've been following it. But do you think it's a tell about your brain that you hear a group of kids are in a cave and you just assume they've been kidnapped and then been freed? Do you think that's...
Well, I can read you the Facebook post where I learned about this. And by the way, understanding, too, that I am the least, like, in touch with the news person in the entire world. Do you think that's probably fair to say? I mean, obviously, just judging by the fact that I only heard about this story after they...
I don't know. I don't follow your news habits, but just keep going. Tell me why you think
pretty closely. So the headline I see shared from my friend's page is all 12 boys and coach have been rescued from the cave in Thailand. And then the subheadline is the coach was keeping the 12 boys in the cave and blah, blah, blah. It goes on from there. So when it says he was keeping them in the cave, it sounds as though they were trying to get out of the cave and he wouldn't let them. So I assume
Personally, my brain doesn't go that way, but I mean, you and I are just wired a little differently. I mean, if you're just, you kind of have more like trapping kids in caves on your brain, I would say. So
when you're keeping something, right? So you're like, oh, where do you keep your milk? Well, I keep it in the fridge. I place it there and it comes out when I feel like it coming out. That's just bad. It's just bad language from this headline. I'm going to blame CBS. I'm going to move on with my life here. You can think whatever you want about me. If you think I would be involved in something like that, you're wrong. Okay.
This is from the guy digging a hole in his backyard for reasons
unknown. Right. Okay. I do. I have a nice big hole in my backyard if any of your kids want to come over and play.
Side note, there's like a 10x4 hole that's perfectly squared out in his backyard. Why he's digging it? Reasons no one's been able to figure it out.
For kids to go in. I told you that when you were here. It's a great spot for kids to go.
So, I don't know if you have a picture of that. If I think about it, I'll post that in the show notes.
It's worse now because it's all overgrown. The kids don't even use it. So it's just like very suspicious. It's got a wood floor in it now too, which is perfect for
what's happening. It's even more suspicious now that your brain goes there. Okay, let's talk about baseball for today. We have a pretty full slate. It's going to be hard for me to get over this. It's a pretty full slate of games. A lot of good pitching and a game in Coors. That's always a little dicey when this situation aligns itself because – when we have to pay or when we are likely going to find a few pitchers that are worth paying up for, and then you get a game that has a run line significantly higher than a lot of other ones. Although there are some other teams that are in good spots here, so we can talk about them. It always becomes something of a salary crunch because you can't do both, right? You can't pay top dollar for a guy like Verlander and then also roster all of the righty Diamondbacks bats, let's say. I'm just throwing that out. That's just going to be – it's simply impossible with the way salaries are structured and especially how FanDuel and DraftKings over the last couple of years have built in what we would call the Coors bump into salaries, just making so that the decisions become at least a little harder. But with this pitching today, we have two guys at the top that I think that stand out above the rest, obviously, and that's Verlander and Bauer. Are you able to distinguish between the two besides just, I mean, the easy physical ways that you would distinguish them by, like, uniform and they look differently and
faces,
they wear different numbers and they're just actually different guys. But besides that, I mean, how are we – let's assume obviously these two of the guys are the top guys to consider. How do we make the determination about – who is better than the other or who we would rather roster? Because it seems to me right now it's going to be a fractional case more than just like one guy stands out way more than the other.
Yeah, so right now it's as close as humanly possible in our projection system lineup or the lineup optimizer in particular. Right now Verlander was in lineup one, I think, and Bauer was in lineup two. And that might sound like not that close, but it's separated by an actual fraction of a point. So like a fraction of a fraction of a point. So yeah, it's extremely close. I mean, the case for either, I guess it breaks down as follows for me. So they each have their own upside aspects and their own downside aspects as well. So Verlander strikes out slightly fewer guys, but also walks, I'd say, dramatically fewer guys. His walk rate is 1.7 per nine. Bauer's is 2.7 per nine. And Bauer, that's the lowest of Bauer's career. So if anything, you could see that walk rate tick back up. So that sounds like Bauer would be a little bit more problematic of a play. But the issue there is that Bauer generates a lot more ground balls than Verlander. Verlander's 29% ground ball rate this season will be the lowest in the league if it stays that low by the end of the season. That's the kind of rate that is just going to lead to a lot of home run production from the other team, regardless of how many guys are striking out. He's sort of run hot on home run to fly ball ratio this season at 7.4%. His career home run to fly ball, actually, it's only 8.3%. So maybe he's just pretty good at preventing that from happening. But the last 2 years, it hasn't worked out that way. It's been over 11%. So I would suspect Verlander, he has more safety in that he won't walk as many guys, but potentially more blow-up risk in that he could allow more home runs. After that, you can just go, you know, the bare sort of Vegas metrics. I think Vegas right now, has Verlander projected for slightly fewer implied runs against. Probably has a better matchup against the A's than Bauer has against the Indians. And that's just about sums it up. I mean, I made a case. I think that they're pretty close. I do stand by that. I would suspect when it's all said and done, Bauer slightly more K upside for my money. So he looks like a pretty big tournament option. I would suspect Verlander more likely to get the win. Vegas likes him to give up fewer runs. And I think that's a pretty reasonable spot to land if you just want to go for cash games.
Yeah, you know, the A's do strike a lot. We saw this with Cole last night with in pretty much the same matchup. They strike out just a little bit more than league average. I think it was like 5% more than league average if they're going to run out the same lineup as they did last night against Cole. The Reds, who Bauer faces, they have some pop in the bat. They, you know, a couple of lefties in the middle of the lineup and Jeanette and Votto that are tough strikeouts.
The Reds have just been good against right-handed pitching this season. They're a top 8 team.
They're a decent team, it's kind of, you know, some of it's Park, but I think a lot of it, they just have an offense that some of these guys, like Scooter, he's just a good hitter this year. Like, I don't really know there's no other way around it. And Votto is just consistently, perennially one of the best hitters in the league. And then they've been kind of shuffled around guys at the top of the order. They have Schebler there now, who I suppose is just better than some of the other guys they've run out. I think I'm probably still going with Bauer. I don't know. So Bauer's funny too, because the other thing these guys have in common is that their strikeout numbers this year are way higher than things that they've done in the past. Now, that's not the case as much with Bauer, who's been on a trajectory that's headed here, and yet he still only struck out 10 per 9 last year, 11.5 this year. Verlander, 9.5 last year, up to 11. Both of them have made slight changes in their pitching profile, so Bauer's just throwing the slider more. I always like, and we talk about this many times in the podcast, I do tend to think that some K numbers, when they are outliers as compared to other years, I often think they're more sustainable. I don't have a great way to prove this, but I do think they're more sustainable when there's been a clear change in the approach of a pitcher. So if he just all of a sudden starting to throw, like, and we're gonna talk about Corbin like this in a second when we get back over to the Rockies, but sure, when there's a guy that all of a sudden is just throwing a pitch way more than he has in the past. So in Bauer's case, that is for sure the slider, and Verlander, and I didn't have it. I know Verlander was doing something slightly different too, and I just don't have it pulled up in front of me. Anyway, I think I'd slightly lean Bauer here, and I think only because we're probably a little low on his K's. A long way to say it's still very, very close. It's going to be very difficult to, I think, separate the two. And I think in the end, without some great Vegas movement or something else happening, my guess is you see them something like equal ownership on both sites, just because they're so close. And I don't think, $200 less on FanDuel and $300 less on DraftKings. I think people are just going to have the same problem of just making the distinction between the two. Now, you really can't roster them together on DraftKings at all. That would take up 26.9 of your salary on a night where there are teams in good spots. So I don't think that is the way to go. There's some cheaper options that our system's calling out here. I don't feel amazing about any of them. I don't know if you can maybe feel better. Guys like Garrett Richards are showing up. Who's the other one? Rich Hill. These guys firmly in the mid-8,000s range. Which you can definitely find value on. You know, Eduardo Rodriguez was a guy like this last night. These guys, I mean, could you see yourself going into cash games with either of these two guys, or is someone else that, you know, the system, you think the system might be low on that you could slot in there? What are you thinking about with starting pitcher two?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're both pretty reasonable options here. Garrett Richards this season, he's kind of been like a more erratic version of Trevor Bauer, 10.5 Ks per nine. He's up to 4 walks per nine. Now, it's interesting for him because The walks were sort of an issue for him, like just basically that first year he came up. And since then, he should be a sub 3 walks per 9 guy. And so him skyrocketing up to 4, now part of that could be a slight change in approach. The fact that he's striking out more guys now probably means that he's being effectively wild on some level. But no, I think he's still totally playable. I mean, anytime you're going to get a guy on the cheaper side that can strike out more than 10 per 9, it's oftentimes worth a look, because everyone's going to have warts in that pitcher 2 slot. But if one of your perks is that you strike out a lot of guys, you can erase a lot of harm just by striking out the inning one time, right? Or striking out the side one inning. On the other side, there's Rich Hill. Now, Rich Hill, actually, he doesn't profile as a terrible pitcher when you just look at the peripherals. 9.7 Ks per 9, 3.2 walks per 9. Like, that actually is probably a little bit better than Richards. It's just Hill's problem is he can't stay in the game. I mean, 10 starts this season, 47 innings pitched. That means that it's going to be tough for you to get a win, even when he does pitch somewhat effectively. So I don't know exactly what to make of that. I mean, I guess part of it, now I take it back, part of that's thrown off by, there's one game started of 0 innings pitched that's kind of throwing off the numbers. Nonetheless, he's still not going deep into games thanks to the Dodgers and their conservative approach to pitch counts. So yeah, I think both of those guys, totally fine pitcher 2 options. Understanding that you're not going to be super psyched. I guess if I had to weigh them out here, I would go Richards on the upside tick. Hill going up against the Padres. Tough for that not to be a safer matchup in Petco. So, I think that's where I'm leaning right now. What do you make of Hill's innings? I mean, can we count on him for more than 5 innings per start here?
I don't think so because, well, one is this guy constantly has blister issues, which has been a
problem.
He
does, right? Isn't it crazy? Just the softest little hands just getting blisters 24/7.
It's just like he's had blister issues basically for the better part of the last 2 or 3 years. It's
first
a real thing.
Career.
Yeah, so he just can't, and for whatever way he grips the ball, and I'm sure there's just smart people trying to work on this, whatever way he grips the ball has been a problem. And you combine that with you have a Dodgers team that just is so finite with their pitch count anyway. I think one thing these guys both have in common is their last starts were each of their last starts were their first starts back from the DL. I hope I said that correctly. So,
So
Hill only threw 74 pitches, 73 pitches in that game. Richards went 80 pitches. Now they both went around 5 innings. They're both really, really good. They did about as well as you can do in that pitch count. I think a good frame of reference for this is about a 10 to 15% pitch increase game over game is what you can reasonably see from a starting pitcher that's coming back and they're trying to work slowly in. So I don't think you're looking at 100 pitches for either of these guys. I think at best you're getting like something like 95 out of Richards. And I think, by the way, I think that's the very best case scenario. And from Hill, judging by what we know about, by the way, Rich Hill looks just like our CTO Blake. Have you seen, you gotta look at Hill's. I'm gonna tell Blake. I never realized this. He looked exactly like him in this picture on ESPN. Jesus. It's like throwing me off now because Blake wears his Dodgers hat too. But anyway, what was I saying? Oh, pitch counts. So yeah, I think with Hill, you're looking something in like the mid 80s. And against the Padres, that can be kind of good enough. They're pretty bad. They are slightly better against righties because they do have a couple guys. I don't know. I'd probably go with Richard. I think I feel a little bit better with Richards knowing that he's probably, to me, a slightly worse pitcher. But I think that he has more pitches in him. And I think that I'm just a little less concerned with how the team handles him.
And yeah, I mean, that's probably fair. He does have I think it's perhaps underselling to not point out that he has a considerably worse matchup with the Mariners here. The Mariners have actually been very effective against right-handed pitching this season with the 9th best WOBA in the league. And the Padres, meanwhile, against lefties, are a bottom 3 team in terms of WOBA. So I think that Hill definitely gets the nod in terms of matchup. I mean, I certainly understand what you're saying about the safety, and I think Richards is a bigger favorite to climb back up to his old pitch count. But I don't know, man. I think it's pretty darn close here.
I think also the other thing that's helping both of these guys is that some of these other pitchers are just have question marks around either their price or their makeup or their opponent or just some combination of those three. So you have other guys in this price range. Tanaka is a big money line favorite. This is his first game back from the DL, so I just can't really trust that he's going to go far into the game against Baltimore. So I think that kind of knocks him off the list. You have Miles Mikolas, who is like up near 10,000 for a guy who doesn't really strike that many batters out. And so you just really can't, it's really hard to pay this kind of salary for a guy who doesn't have a ton of Ks in his profile. Nick Quintana, this guy's been all over the place this year, just a million walks. He's 8,300. He's usually going to have a money line in his favor because of the team. And I take it back. They're pretty much a pick-em against San Francisco, so forget that. And then you got Cueto, who got rocked on the way back from injury. Teheran against Toronto, no thanks. And then it really just kind of drops off after that. So I think that I think that's sort of where we're left with some of the, with specifically Richards and Hill, because I just think you just have it's just problematic around the rest of the pitchers, and it doesn't always feel good. These, you know, DK starting pitcher two is rarely going to feel, you're rarely going to feel great about it, right? There's going to be some problem with it. Like, the guy's either cheap for a reason, because he's been rocked and running bad, or, you know, he's cheap, but he has a good matchup. Like, you rarely walk into a situation with the starting pitcher two where you're like, nice, you know?
Now, it's just about this, adjusting your expectation, because I kind of feel nice when I see these guys in there. And again, it's like, when you just get used to not bagging the 10s, all of a sudden the sixes feel pretty nice, you know? And I think that's the situation here with our guys, Rich Hill and Garrett Richards. What's so funny?
Sometimes you're,
I'm trying to make a relatable example to what I believe our target demographic to be. Guys who are used to not getting 10s and used to getting sixes. I don't know why it's not outside the realm of possibility. No offense to anyone out there, but come on.
Sometimes you're able to keep the whole soccer team in the cave, and sometimes someone comes and rescues them. You know? Like, all right. On that note, hit us up with a sponsor. We'll get to some of these stacks.
This segment brought to you by NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime is a great place to go to download a fantasy app that's very different from the other ones that you'll play out there. The really nice thing about NoHalftime is that it just requires a much lower time commitment. Basically, if you have one guy you're really excited about today that you've turned up in your research, maybe he's overpriced on FanDuel or wherever else, you can go over to No Halftime, just take that guy and issue a challenge to the world. Say, I think Rich Hill is going to be better than Garrett Richards, and turn your nose up at everyone who thinks otherwise, right? If anyone accepts your challenge, awesome, it's game on. It'll be a winner-take-all contest between the two of you. If not, no worries, you get your money refunded. You can also go through the app and see all the other challenges that people are issuing and accept them or deny them at your leisure. So check them out, nohalftime.com. Download the app and use promo code DFSR to get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit.
All right. We're going to get to some of these stacks here, but I have a question for you on the run line in Colorado. So right now,
okay, it's not another question just to make fun of me, like what? Earlier.
I'm not going to beat you into a trap.
Okay, like, you're not like, setting me up with another one. Okay,
I'm not setting you up like a trap, like taking kids into a cave or anything like that. There is no traps like that. So the run line in Colorado right now is right around a pick'em at, what was it, like, I think it was 11 implied runs or something like that. Now, does this strike you as weird? Because, yeah, it's 11 over-under with minus 104 each. So, yeah, it's basically just a pick'em. I mean, Patrick Corbin has been awesome this year. He's been among the very best pitchers in the entire league. And I understand why, you know, we model some off Vegas, so that's going to incorporate some of that Vegas line in there with the implied runs. And then you start to see possibly some Colorado guys creeping in there because they're so good against lefties. Guys like Arenado, I think Arenado's been the very best in the league against lefties over the last 2 years. Actually, I don't even think it's all that close. Then you have Story. He's like in the top 10 against lefties. Desmond's really turned it on this season after being just dreadful last season. So they for sure have some righty bats in there that can do damage. And yet, to see an implied run line from a pitcher, I mean, Corbin's peripherals are just amazing this year. Does this line strike you as a little odd, knowing what we, or, you know, from what we've seen from Corbin this year?
Well, it does. But Corbin is somewhat of an enigma to me. So let's break down Patrick Corbin for a little bit, because he's been one of these guys that has had an xFIP below his ERA for year after year after year, and kind of one of these guys that, you know, prospectors and people who kind of know baseball on the inside have been pointing to a potential breakout for Corbin. But there's one really odd anomaly that I sort of can't wrap my mind around. So this year, Corbin's batting average on balls in play is .277, which for like the average pitcher would be a little bit lucky. Normally you'll see pitchers hover around that .300 mark. But the prior seasons, he went .326, .322, .327, .317 in the majors, and then it's just a bunch of minor league stints, so I don't know if we can draw too much from that. But basically been .320 or higher in every season except for 2013. So what's the real Corbin? You know, is he more of like a league average guy? Was he just running bad for year after year after year? Or is he just actually, it looks like he's running a little bit lucky with a .277 BABIP, but is he actually running like 50 points hot? And is that what Vegas is seeing here? That's the thing I can't really figure out with Corbin, because, yeah, by and large, you just don't, I mean, a guy with a .265 xFIP should never have a 5.5 implied run line here, even in Coors. And so I just wonder if that's kind of what Vegas is seeing, that the real baseline Corbin is a .320, .325 batting average on balls in play guy, in which case we're going to see some serious regression sometime soon.
So he's one of these guys, and we talked about this with Bauer. He actually is an extreme approach difference guy. One of the biggest approach differences that you're going to see really from like anybody in season over season. So in the past, he has thrown, I'll just do this very quickly. In the past, he's averaged about 30% of the time fastballs. This year, he's throwing a fastball less than 20% of the time. He's throwing a sinker way more than he ever has in the past. Actually, I mean, you have to go back to like 2013. But the real difference is he just brought a curveball out of nowhere. Like he had never thrown, according to PitchFX data on Fangraphs, he had never thrown a curveball at all in his previous five major league seasons. And now he's throwing a curveball 11% of the time. So, and that's a huge jump. You simply don't really, you often just don't see that. You don't see a guy.
He's going to catch people off guard, right? If that's just not on the book on Corbin. Yeah, that's
and it's a pretty, and it's a plus pitch for him. Like all of a sudden, like he went from not having a curveball at all to having like a really good curveball. So when he like his outside of the zone swinging percentage is up, really everything that would imply or everything that would show that this is like kind of sustainable is like there for me for in terms of PitchFX data. And I don't know if I read too much into that sometimes, but it's something I've spent
Curve too. It's got a real big velocity differential, so that is going to generate a lot of swings and misses.
And so all of a sudden you're looking at less hard contact, which has been the case, and when that's the case, your BABIP is theoretically going to go down because the balls just have find less places in the infield to go. I just see him as a different pitcher. Like I look at his numbers this year and say this guy is just different. It's very difficult to completely compare the past of what he's done to what he's doing this year if he's just going to be a guy that throws all different pitches. I think this run line is crazy. I am not a big MLB, just like straight line better. This would be one that I would be, it's funny too, because like, I'd like to take the implied run line just off the Colorado side. And I guess you could theoretically do that by just betting the under. We can talk about Tyler Anderson because Tyler Anderson has been decent too. This run line seems too high for me compared to knowing the two pitchers that we have in place here, specifically because I think Corbin is way better than a guy that should be getting 5.6 implied runs against, even in the very worst of conditions. So,
I agree with that. I think there's a chance that you're maybe overselling the approach change from Corbin a little bit. Like, you're right compared to his career numbers, but like last year, he threw the fastball only 4% more than this year. The slider is identical. And he's basically the big change is he swapped out a changeup for a curveball, and that's significant. But I don't know that he's a completely different pitcher or anything like that. The velocity is actually down in his fastball. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that matters less to me because he just doesn't throw it as much. I don't know. I don't think I'm totally overselling it. Do I think he's going to stick at like 11.5 Ks or 11.25 Ks per nine? Probably not, because just most pitchers don't. It's just rare. That's just a rare number to sort of hit. So I don't think he's going to stick there. And I think I'm mostly just making the point that I just think this run line is too high. I think he's
I still think the run line's too high. I don't feel any big need to stack Coors, and that's stack Colorado rather. And that's the big fundamental question here, right? Do you trust the Vegas run line and stack the Rockies because you get some reasonable prices there, or do you just say, nah, why bother, and just spend up on pitching instead?
Because Tyler Anderson is decent too. He's not great. I mean, 8.3 Ks per nine, less than three walks. He does keep the ball.
That's pretty good for pitching half your games in Coors, man.
Yeah, and he's had a decent. Although the ground ball rate's gone down a little bit this year. I was gonna say I pictured him more as the 2016 51% ground ball rate, but that went down in last year and has gone down significantly again. So again, I'm always liking guys, especially in Coors, when they can generate a few more ground balls. He hasn't been doing that as much. Mm-hmm. I do think overall with the two arms that are going here, I think this run line is a little high, and I think just because of who we have going here, I have no problem just waiting a little bit more, maybe waiting to a little bit later in the series to find some better pitching matchups. Now, I'm sure one of the things that is driving the run line, and this will be the last thing we say about it, and we can move on to some of these other stacks, is there is a 12 mile an hour wind blowing out to left. So if there's two lefties going and it's going to be righty heavy bats and the wind is blowing out to left, that is probably one of the things that's driving this run line up pretty significantly. So we'll see. This is where
and
this
breaking stuff is harder to throw in Coors too. Like if he's relying more on the curveball, balls break less in Coors. Yeah, there's reason to understand, I think, why the money line is where it is. But
all right, walk us through some of the stacks then that we maybe can feel a little bit better about, because there are some really bad pitchers going today.
Sure, yeah. So I think, you know, my process, as I've said many times here, is just really to go through the guys that are sort of underqualified to be pitching in the majors and stack against them, almost independent of the offenses facing them. The first guy that comes up on my list today is Dylan Covey, pitching for the White Sox against the Cardinals. Covey this season averaging almost exactly 5 innings per start, so that's not so great. K per 9 around 6.8, walk per 9 through the roof at 4.3. With the 4-5 XFIP, he's just a candidate to get rocked on any given night. The Cardinals do have one of the higher implied totals on the day as well, and our system is pulling them out. The one thing with Covey, I guess, that's a feather in his cap is he is somewhat of an extreme ground ball pitcher. So You know, he manages to give up more than a home run per nine in spite of generating ground balls on 57% of his balls in play. But, you know, ground balls can turn into big innings as well with Kobe's understandable BABIP issues. So, yeah, I think the Cardinals are a pretty solid bet. I would, I guess, caution against stacking the whole team. Again, ground balls mean that Kobe could wiggle out of some innings here and there, but I still think they're a good value nonetheless.
He went through a two-game stretch where people thought he was good. He's not. He didn't pitch shutouts because he didn't pitch the whole game, but he had two games of 11 innings, no earned runs, and then he followed up with 7 innings, 2 runs. Those I can't say is anything more than outlier games. Like, he's just not – this guy's track record is not this kind of pitcher, and he has – understandably regressed since then and been absolutely horrible over the short term, which is much more in line with what he's done over the course of his career. Yeah. So he's like not a guy
What would you expect as well?
Exactly. Sure. He hadn't made any fundamental changes. Really, he just kind of got a little bit luckier, like you said, with the aforementioned ground balls. We also have guys like Giovanni Gallardo going today. This guy's complete trash. The Red Sox run line the Red Sox had the highest run line of the day, and they're up by like 10% or something like that. They have, you know, Colorado and Arizona are coming in right around 5.6. The Red Sox are at 6.2. Now, they're expensive, so I think that's going to be a problem. We run into sort of the same problems with the Red Sox that we do with Coors, in that guys like Betts, JD, Benintendi, Steve Pierce, although he might not be in the lineup against the righty, these guys are all just at this point very, very expensive. I mean, Betts has been about as good a baseball player as you can be in the majors this year. He's been so good, but he's 5,100. I'm just not to stack the Red Sox. You are going to need to make some concessions at pitching the same way you would do at Coors. I mean, besides these guys, who else is kind of standing out to you?
Yeah, so I think there's a few more just kind of generically bad pitchers going today. You've got Andrew Kashner with his 7 Ks per nine and 4 walks per nine. He's pitching against the Yankees, so again, you're going to have to spend up for it. And then there's another guy. It's actually kind of funny. He's having a comically bad, like, his line on the season is comically bad, is Ian Kennedy. And again, on a day where Giovanni Gallardo has an 8.18 ERA, but is 3-0 in the wins department. Poor Ian Kennedy's 1-8 with a 5 ERA. But Kennedy is just, you know, back up to his old ones. He's putting tons of balls up in the zone and just giving up home runs at the same breakneck pace he's been giving them up for 4 years. I'm actually startled that someone can have thrown, almost 1,000 1,000 innings over the longer stretch. But in the last four seasons, he's thrown almost 500 innings of 1.7 home run per nine ball. That is just incredible, and it's going to make him a huge stacking target day in, day out. So he's going up against the Twins today. You can grab some of the guys with pop there. Nice thing about Kennedy is that the strikeout numbers are sort of low for a guy who leaves so many balls up in the zone, and when guys get a hold of it, they just hit the ball really hard. So yeah, I'd be looking for a twin stack for big tournaments for sure.
If I'm looking on the cheaper side, and this is like with the idea that we're going to be rostering like a Verlander or a Bauer, I don't mind the Pirates. Jeremy Hellickson has not been as bad this year as he's been in the past, mostly because he's been able to keep the walk rate down, and I believe the hard contact rate for him is a little lower than we've seen in the past, though it's still not very good. He's still not a very good pitcher. He's ringing in there right around your average pitcher, and I do expect the ERA to just, he doesn't strike out enough guys to really sustain like a mid threes ERA or xFIP. So I'm looking probably for some regression from him, but mostly I'm just looking at the Pirates, how cheap they're coming. So they're right around 4.5 implied runs, but they've messed around with their lineup enough and they've just had some struggles that these guys are coming very, very cheap. So we had Dickerson yesterday. He hit leadoff. I don't know where he's going to slot back in today. Josh Bell at times has hit leadoff. He's coming very cheap on both sites. Gregory Polanco, they moved up into the three spot. He's under 3,000. Colin Moran is like under 2,500 on FanDuel. So basically, almost every single one of the I'm FanDuel. I'm just seeing this. Except for Marte, every single one of the guys in their projected lineup today is under 3,000 on FanDuel. And that kind of thing does matter. So when you're getting guys just coming on the cheaper side, if we're looking for a cheaper stack, I don't mind the Pirates here, knowing that it's not the very best matchup in the world, but I'm really kind of just looking more at their prices. Anyone else before we get out of here?
Well, yeah, the last guy I think I don't want to sleep on tonight, and you actually might be able to get reasonable ownership just because the Vegas line, I think, again, is kind of weird, is the Brewers against Pablo Lopez. Now, Lopez has been kind of a fast riser in the Marlins system. He's had some success at like Double A and High A. He really wasn't very good in Triple A before being called up and was pretty underwhelming in his first two starts, going just 11 innings with 6.5 Ks per nine and 2.45 walks per nine. And I think more importantly in that stretch, since he's gotten out of Double A ball, basically, he's been giving home runs at also a breakneck pace, 2.45 home runs per nine through the 11 innings that he's thrown so far. I think the Brewers are a sneaky snack. I, sneaky snack, I call them. You can have them as a snack. A sneaky stack. And I think Lopez, I think you're going to see the run lines on Lopez increase as people potentially learn that at age 22, he's just not quite ready for the majors yet. So, yeah, I definitely like the Brewers today.
One more before we get out of here, just on the cheaper side, is the Matt Boyd is still going for the Tigers. This guy has, he was able to piece together some BABIP run hot for a little while. Like, his BABIP is still kind of low at 2.64. This guy's XFIP is right around 5. He's basically the same pitcher that we saw last year. There's no real changes. This is a guy with a 5 XFIP, doesn't strike anyone out, walks everybody, and he's going to face a Rays lineup that is going to run mostly righties down at Duffy, Robertson, Ramos, Cron, right down like two, that's 2 through 5, and even Kiermaier.
Basically the 27 Yankees.
Yeah, exactly. It's not great, but they're very cheap. I'm mostly just putting it in on the cheap team that's up against a bad pitcher that does have some guys with nice splits, like Robertson and Ramos specifically. Actually, no, Robertson's like platoon neutral, but Ramos and Cron are better against lefties. So really just looking at some price savings anywhere I can get it. I'll take a bad team at times against a bad pitcher, just if I can get them a little cheaper when there are guys to spend up for. So just the park doesn't help them at all. And again, they're like not all that great of a team, but cheap against a bad pitcher. So I think you can look there too. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more baseball. Buddy, enjoy your Tuesday.
Don't worry about me, man. I will.